Welcome to Coffee with the College, a podcast brought to you by the American College of Healthcare Executives, Wisconsin chapter. Our goal is that listeners find this podcast as relaxing as coffee with friends and just as comfortable as you hear our guests and observers banter about questions that are on all of our minds. If you've listened to our podcast before, you're familiar with our format. I'm your host, Janet Schultz. I'm Chief Information Officer at a human services company called MyPath. Our observers are Brian Mahulski, Health System Specialist at the Zablocki VA Medical Center in Milwaukee.
Hello, everyone. Great to be here.
And Abraham Dulhoff, Manager of Virtual Care and Patient Access to Care at Mercy Health. Abraham?
Hello. Happy to be here.
Today, we're exploring what is it like to be a physician who opts to pursue a medical staff leadership or administrative position. Today, we're having coffee with Dr. Joe Bain, a family medicine physician at Mayo Clinic Health System, who also serves as Vice Chair of Family Medicine Clinical Practice, as well as Chair of the Virtual Community Care Subcommittee for Southwestern Wisconsin. Dr. Bain also is an instructor of family medicine within the Mayo Clinic system. Welcome, Dr. Bain.
Thank you for having me.
We're glad you're here with us today, and there were a lot of titles I rattled off. So we're hoping that maybe you could get us started by giving us a bit of a career flyover.
Sure. Once again, thanks for having me. I'll give you a brief overview of where I come from, too. I'm actually from Madison, Wisconsin. Decided to go to an undergraduate at a smaller school in our state, University of Wisconsin, Stevens Point. I then went to medical school over in Milwaukee, and I see Brian is related to the Zablocki VA. So I got a little bit of a flavor of the different size communities, you know, medium to small to large. And ultimately, I decided a smaller community was for me. So within my pathway, I decided to go to the residency here in the La Crosse region and fell in love with the community. So I was very lucky, had a great educational training here at the Mayo Clinic La Crosse residency. Was asked to be the chief resident in my final year here, which afforded me a little bit more responsibility, but also insight into the ongoings of the healthcare system. Ultimately, I chose to practice here in Onalaska, which is a community just a couple miles north of La Crosse. What I chose to do in my clinical practice was to do outpatient only. I loved obstetrics, chose to defer that in my clinical practice, though, and kept my hand in quite a bit of urgent care and also remained serving as a hospitalist. So I really liked the broad spectrum approach. That's really why I got into family medicine in the first place, is sort of take care of all capacities of patients and their families. And throughout that, I think I was benefited by continually having a pulse on what's going on in multiple areas of our healthcare institution, from inpatient to outpatient. And so I think it afforded me a sort of a unique perspective. I was actually the only physician who still did both inpatient, outpatient. I think that allowed me to have a better understanding of our healthcare group. How I got into leadership roles were actually kind of interesting. I've never really sought it out. To be honest with you, I never really looked at myself as getting into administration. Actually, I was sort of semi-opposed to it, if you will, kind of early on. I said, no, I'll never do that. But early on in my career, I got asked to help with actually the Quick Trip. If you're familiar with the Quick Trip convenience stores, they actually were starting a healthcare center for their employees. They used a third-party entity based out of Vermont. And I was able to help them get their clinic up and running through a collaborative agreement with Mayo. And it was really unique because I got to take care of those patients and help to provide care for them, but also to coordinate care between whether they have been a Mayo patient or a Gunderson patient. So it really allowed me to look at it from a global perspective, what was in the best interest in the patient. So I did that for a couple of years. I think it was rather successful. I got involved in a couple of other things. Once again, commonly asked to do it because I think part of your resume is how you do throughout your entire training and how you really do with any projects. So a couple of years ago, our family medicine chair decided that the Department of Family Medicine, it would be necessary to have a vice chair because of the number of individuals that make sure that they were thriving in practice. So the chair of family medicine, Dr. Kevin Fitzgerald, asked me to be the vice chair of practice. My first answer was no. I smiled and kind of laughed it off. He then came back to me about a week later. He said, I want you to be the vice chair. And I said, well, Still no. Then he came after me a third time and said, I really want you to be this. And I said, why? And he said, I think you're well suited. I think you're in a good position with experience, even though you're on the younger side. He said, I really think you're ready for this. It was about 7 years into my clinical practice. So I said, well, let me think about it. So I thought about it and I came back to him. And I said, sure, I will do it with one caveat. I told Dr. Fitzgerald that with one rule, that my number one goal at all times would be to make sure that our primary care providers are able to render care with some autonomy and some ingenuity for their patients. So as long as that is understood, I will do it. I also had another fantastic mentor by the name of Dr. Joe Crean. He's actually our chair of clinical practice. And he told me many years ago, he said, Joe, guys like you and I either get promoted or fired. And I said, why is that? And he said, because you're honest. He said, you're very honest. You're respectful, but you tell people what needs to be said, but you do it in a respectful manner. And he said, you're willing to disagree. You're willing to sit at the table with people and tell people why that's not a good idea. And he said, we need those voices. And he jokingly said, well, you'll either get fired or promoted. Well, he eventually got promoted and he came back and smiled at me. He said, remember how I said you're going to get fired or promoted? I said, you're just like me. Well, I got promoted. So careful what you wish for. And that really resonated true to me that, you know, stick to honesty, stick to integrity, be polite, but also get the message across that needs to be stated. To achieve my role of the chair of virtual care subcommittee, I was actually asked to do that as well. So when the COVID crisis hit, it really provided the necessary opportunity to adapt our clinical practice. Mayo Clinic had a plan that we were going to institute over the next 10 years to really start developing this virtual care platform for our patients. We knew that this was a changing theme within the healthcare world. Frankly put, the 2030 plan very rapidly became a 30-day plan. And so one of our local leaders said, geez, Joe, you're pretty good at getting into the deep details and trying to figure out how to make things work. We need you to go and figure out how we make these video visits work. You got about a week. So I worked with teams of all capacities to get these up and running. And then he said, great, train your colleagues in your family medicine department in Onalaska. So I did that. And he said, great, good job. Now we want you to train the entire 240 plus staff. You got a week to do that. So I comprised a team of about five people. And it was really just out of necessity to really rapidly adapt. And so I did that. It was just a sort of a project they asked me to undertake. And we were quite successful at it. And then Mayo Clinic decided they need actually some formal leadership to continue to develop it. And they asked me to run it because of the success that we had had.
Dr. Bain, I'm going to try my hardest not to just turn this into a virtual care conversation.
No worries.
But a couple of things that were pretty interesting as you were outlining your experience was the individuals who came and asked you to do something. I assume it wouldn't have been just anybody that picked up the phone and said, hey, Dr. Bain, I want you to do this. And you would have said yes. I mean, you even said no to the people that you liked. Mm-hmm. But what made... Maybe give us some context on what made those relationships valuable to you and what was important about that relationship, either professionally or personally, that made you want to say yes in the first place.
That's a great question. And so in Southwest Wisconsin, historically, we have been very primary care centric. And over the past couple of years, we've really increased our capacity to deliver specialty care. The clinic that I practice out of, the Onalaska Clinic, a lot of the local leadership has actually come from that clinic. And I suspect it's due to the nature of how they are as individuals and really their experience as well. So I came to have a very good longstanding relationship with these providers. And so truly the leaders who have asked me to take part are those who I've had experience with in this family medicine Onalaska clinic. I've been able to witness their leadership skills, form collegial and friendly relationships with them. And I understand that when I look at leaders, these are the people that I really want to take after. They really have their heart in the right place. They have patients in mind, top of the list, providers in mind as well. And the balancing act of trying to achieve both goals to ensure that patients are taken care of to the best ability we have and that providers are able to thrive in practice and to balance it with organizational demands, needs, and considerations really was insightful to me. So I've looked at them, appreciated what they've done, and I'd be willing to take it on as well.
So Dr. Bain, you've had a lot of successes and you're on the right side of that equation of being promoted and not fired. and building those relationships. I was going to say, how did you get noticed? But you had all the good mentors. Is there anybody in your past that has created adversity for you based on you being forward or speaking your mind or anything like that? And how did you handle that?
Yeah, well, I think you have to go in with some humility as well, right? So there's a fine line between confidence and cockiness. I was told that a long time ago in sports, and I agree with that wholeheartedly. So you have to go in with some humility, and you have to go in with the ability to listen and to hear, right? So proactive listening is highly important. And I will say that when I first started in this role, I was provided feedback even before day one. And so I actually thought it was very helpful. I mean, this person was very open and forward with me even before we even got started. And I appreciated that. And this individual, she said, please don't take offense to this. And I said, I don't take offense to this. I actually thrive on truthful and I would say direct communication, because I think we have to be honest with each other. Otherwise, we're not going to thrive. And she had actually given me some good insight on different books to read and various other things like that. So I wouldn't necessarily say it was adversity, but I would say it was a good wake-up call right out of the gates.
Oh, that's great. Well, it sounds like that even the challenging colleagues have helped you grow, and it wasn't to negatively impact your career. I've heard that same thing where there's a fine line between confidence and arrogance.
Thanks, Dr. Bain. So I want to build off a little bit of what you were saying in terms of some of the books that you were given to read. Has there been any other formal training you've been provided as an emerging physician leader? And if so, what did you find helpful and what not so much?
Yeah, so thank you. I'd say that it first actually began in my chief residency. We were able to have a couple of opportunities to get together with chief residents from all the different programs in the country on two separate occasions. And they had a lot of leadership development training within those conferences. Additionally, prior to me taking on the role of family medicine vice chair, I had actually been asked about a year prior to that to take part in a leadership development program that the Mayo Clinic offers. And that was based out of Rochester. And we really got to get to know some of the other up-and-coming leaders of various departments, and not just physicians and or healthcare providers, but it really helped me to understand the complicated matrix of how things really get done in a large enterprise. I also went to what's called a provider burnout conference, because I know that that's a huge issue with providers. So I went to the first ever, and that was really helpful to me to understand barriers and things that people are up against to try to continue to thrive. But frankly put, the majority of the leadership training was actually on the job, learning it as you go, you know, taking mistakes as they occur and learning from them.
So do you have a mistake or stubbed your toe story you're willing to share, Dr. Bain?
We were having an issue at one of our clinics and we were trying to address that. And so we had called together a meeting to help sort of figure out what was going on with these interpersonal relationship issues that were ongoing. And our intent was to help make it better, but I think it was perceived as negative. The person that we were trying to help felt singled out. And I think after the fact actually felt worse off about the whole situation than prior. And so I definitely had to do some recovery with that individual and apologize. The intention was to actually make this better. It should have been communicated better, the goals of this, prior to having the formal meeting as a group. And so I learned that you've got to do a little bit better preparation for expectations with meetings. And it all has resolved very well. And ironically enough, that individual has now taken an additional leadership role too.
Well, it sounds like it was a learning experience, but also that humility you talked about before came into play. And that probably was the best role modeling you could have done at that point.
I remember going through learnings and, I mean, formal and informal. I've got plenty of my own stub my toe story, but there's always the difference between theory and practice, right, Dr. Bain? Let's assume that we've got some providers listening now who've been asked, Dr. So-and-so, we want you to take a formal role or maybe even an informal role, leading some of your peers. What advice would you give them?
Yeah, that's actually a great question. And so one of the most frustrating things that I think providers face is when they're trying to practice in an autonomous and innovative way within the confines of organizational requirements. And I'd say that really when it comes down to it, people say, well, why does it have to be done this way? You know, can't we do it more simply? Can't we just do it that way? And so it's a balancing act of allowing the providers on an individual basis to do what needs to be done, but understanding that there are a lot of steps and a lot of teams that need to be involved to make sure that something does go forth in a positive and consistent manner. Was that sort of provider who said, well, why can't it just be this way? You know, and I truly do believe the best ideas do come from the ground. And I think that's the most important thing as a developing leader, is to be assertive, be empathetic, but then also to be inquisitive. How can I make this go more smoothly? And frankly put, the ideas that we have started to integrate truly have come from the ground up. And I give credit to those individuals when able to do so, to say, hey, this person had this phenomenal idea. We're going to try to go with this. So learning that delicate balancing act and the barriers is, I think, huge. Also understanding that this is a lot of extra work. I have a young family, and I'll say that early on, I did not do a good job at work-life balance with this. I really spent too much time on the work component. I learned that, though, and I had some good mentors, and they gave me a lot of good feedback, too. And the other thing I'd bring to their attention is this is commonly a thankless job. You have to take solace in the little wins that you know are going to allow for your colleagues to thrive. And it may not be apparent. You know, there's very few overt pats on the back, and that's okay. You have to be okay with the fact that not everything is going to resolve in a manner that everyone's going to be 100% happy with. Small wins that keep you motivated and keep you going.
It's like golf, right? The front nine and then the back nine are the reason you go back out.
This is where I confess that golf is an excuse to be outside. Let's pause for a moment to thank our sponsors who make this podcast possible, and for that, we truly appreciate them. Our premier sponsors are Epstein Ewan Architects, HGA, and Hush Blackwell. Our preferred sponsors are Hall Render, Findorf, Nutanix, and Quarles & Brady.
There's a term that we used in grad school and fairly infrequently now, the loneliness of leadership. That you get into this space and you have to figure out why you're there. And I think that's one of the reasons we see so much burnout in healthcare, is we forget why we're here. We forget, I came here because of X, Y, and Z, and then A, B, and C, and all the other things that fall into your duties make you forget about that.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right.
With you being on the younger side of your career and having the leadership roles, can you tell us a little bit about leading those that are more experienced than you?
Absolutely. And so, you know, the vast majority of individuals in our family medicine department are older than myself. It's a balancing act, right? And you want to go in with the respect of their experience and where they come from, and acknowledge that, and also go in with a positive and optimistic attitude. And also, I think, education as to why things are changing the way they are, and providing that understanding. So even if they don't agree with that, I mean, you tell a person who's been in clinical practice 30 years that there's a substantial shift and now we're going to be doing all this medicine virtually as well. That's a huge change. I mean, none of us got into medicine thinking that that would be commonplace. I think it's a combination of respect, but also being assertive and being informative. I think if people understand why things are the way they are, even if they don't agree with them, they're more apt to come along. And I think finding ways to motivate and encourage to see why things are the way they are, and to experiencing it even on small scale, is helpful. But I will say it is an ever-present challenge. There are individuals who were set in our ways, and they've been set in their ways, and it is difficult. I'll acknowledge that. But I think if you go into it with the right attitude, they understand.
Giving the why always reduces the consternation.
Well, Dr. Bain, as you've been talking, Simon Sinek's book, Start With Why, has come into my head. It sounds like your leader would have been more successful in recruiting you the first time if he would have started with why. And now you've brought that start with why as a principle in managing discussions too.
Yeah, I would agree. And to be fair, the first time he did ask me, I happened to be in flip-flops and shorts in the clinic bringing my daughter in for a well child visit, and he just caught me in the hallway. So we didn't really have a robust discussion. But you are correct that having a better understanding may have swayed me.
Yeah.
Dr. Bain, what experiences would you not trade away in your career? What did you find most valuable?
Yeah, and so I'm a firm believer in you are where you are now because of everything you've experienced. And so even the tough battles throughout life, you know, family experiences, upbringings, educational training, I would not trade away anything. And I mean that, and a lot of people, they say that, but I actually truly mean that. You know, I've been through some battles early on in my life that during the battle itself, it's hard to see the light at the end of the tunnel and how this is going to perhaps make you a stronger person. You know, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. And looking back, and understanding that, I think, has probably been the most beneficial thing. So positive experiences, negative experiences, they are all useful. I heard a great term once, and it was, there is no such thing as failure, only feedback. And that really resonated true to me, that you learn as you go, you adapt as you go. I think most people in medicine probably learn best from their failures, from things that didn't go as well. And I think that's why you have to really be willing to look into those things, not failures, but feedback. So if you look at it in the manner that it could be a benefit to allow you to grow, I think if you can look back and say, I really wouldn't trade anything away.
So can you give us an experience that you wouldn't trade it away because you see that it's valuable, but something that you'd never want to go over again?
So early in my career, yeah, I said yes to everything. Absolutely. Yes to this, yes to that. And I had to learn how to say no, especially when it comes to projects and different opportunities. And I really had a difficult time achieving that work-life balance. So that's one thing that I would say is still difficult for all providers in their practice, is a work-life balance. If you ever 100% feel you're balanced, great. I have yet to meet that individual. If you can do that, that would be the best outcome. So I'm still learning, but I would say that over the last 3 years or so, thankfully, I've been able to do better at that. And I wouldn't necessarily trade it away, but I wish I would have learned how to do that earlier.
I really like the comment you made before. There's no such thing as failure. It's feedback. And in leadership, I guess in life in general, I think it helps you roll with the punches. It helps you grow as a person. So that's really great. Thanks, Dr. Bain.
So I want to go back, Dr. Bain, to something you said early. And you said that when you finally said yes on attempt number 3, that your number one goal was to ensure that the primary care providers were able to render care with autonomy and ingenuity. So how are you doing on that goal?
It is challenging. And I will say that the reason that leadership is lonely is that the relationship does change. You know, with colleagues, you are still a colleague, but you're now, quote, a leader. You're, quote, their boss. And it is a delicate balancing act. I will say that I have caught myself a couple of times almost swaying away from that. And thankfully, I've been able to, at this juncture, catch myself. So I've asked some of my colleagues whom I trust very well to let me to provide me that feedback and say, how are we doing with this? I will say that my goal remains the same. And at every opportunity I have at every committee, I still pride myself in constantly looking out for the family medicine department as my number one goal in that role. And so I am staying true to that path. And I think the moment we start swaying from that, we really have to do an internal look to say, where am I at? What are my goals? Am I still on the right path? And thus far, I've had success with that. And I hope to continue, and I'm going to make concerted efforts to continue to maintain that as a priority. If indeed I become the chair of the department, I think it'll be even more important and perhaps even more difficult to continue with that mindset.
Your ability to reflect and your self-awareness is inspiring, I have to say.
That's one of those things where it's textbook versus real life, right? You know, you got to be able to do this. Not everything's by the textbook. Just like when you see a patient, there's very, very few patients who come across and they are defined by the textbook exactly how they present. And same thing in leadership.
So want to wrap up our podcast today with pulling out a few threads from our conversation. And thank you again, Brian and Abraham, for being great observers and asking great questions. And thank you, Dr. Bain, for your candor. When we first started the podcast, Dr. Bain talked a little bit about his passion for care coordination and that was at the heart of the opportunity he saw to rally everyone around doing what is in the best interest of the patient. And I think we heard a lot from Dr. Bain today about how he leads with that as a core operating principle. So another core operating principle is that it is important for us to remember that we all need to have a willingness to disagree. And isn't that a profound statement? A willingness to disagree. That we need the different voices so that ingenuity and innovation can come forward every day. And in our willingness to disagree, there needs to be humility and we need to listen and hear. And that isn't as easy as it sounds. And then the other final thing that I noted from the many lessons Dr. Bain shared was the statement that when COVID hit, the 2030 plan very rapidly became a 30-day plan. And I just have to say, that's a profound statement too. And I think it's a lesson learned that we could probably explore in another podcast, because historically, healthcare has been slow to move in some instances, and some best practices have taken decades to take hold, not 30 days. I think has lessons learned for all of us in terms of what we were able to accomplish when we really needed to, so that circling back, we could keep the best interests of the patient at heart. Because if we hadn't pivoted to virtual care as we did, there would have been even more lives lost. So congratulations to you and the team, Dr. Bain, for making that pivot so quickly. So that's our podcast for today. As always, we thank you for listening, and we look forward to you joining us at the next Coffee with the College. Have a great day.